do begin.
Hey, what is up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Social Primate Podcast, and with the one and only Ome.
That's right.
What a Raven.
Ome, that's me.
How you doing, dude?
I'm chilling, man. I'm chilling like a villain. You know, it's been a hectic week for me.
Yeah.
Super hectic week. I'm coming back from New York. I was tattooing in New Jersey, but I went out there a few days prior to go experience New York. It was super dope. You know, I got to go see a baseball game with the tattoo fam. Went to the Bronx by myself. You know.
Dude, that's fucking... That was a
highly recommend, highly don't recommend, depending on your character of person, you know?
It was the first time you headed out to New York?
Yeah, it was my first time ever in New York. I went to Philly a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool. Had a lot of fun in Philly. The last day was really dope. Shout out to the homie Alfonso. We went out mobbing like the last night. He's a tattoo artist as well. And then Philly was cool. It's a place that I would never live there, but visiting was awesome. You know?
Yeah, I've been to those kind of places where you're like, yeah, this is cool only for a couple of days.
Yeah. New York and New Jersey, same. Like visiting was amazing. I could never, ever live there. I don't know how, like, people in New York are New Yorking right now, and I don't know how they do it.
I know. That's why they criticize. I was like, yeah, you're from L.A. Like, you're used to driving everywhere. Like, you know, like you were mentioning just a few minutes ago, like the whole subway and the comparison to us, we're just driving everywhere. There's no parking.
Yeah. Most New Yorkers that are born there don't know how to drive.
That's fucking crazy because you think about it here, you're like, you can't even get around anywhere without a car. I mean, you can. But you're taking you're taking the long way there.
But I didn't even see any gas stations in New York City.
Dude, that's a fucking trip.
My one of my homies, his daughter lives out there. She goes to NYU. And I asked her, like, where are the gas stations? And she's like, she thought about it. She goes, oh, I never thought about it. I haven't seen one. She's been out there for a year.
Dude, that's fucking nuts. I've been meaning to go out there just to take my kid out because he was Spider-Man. She's like, I want to go visit New York City. Man,
you got to take him to the top of the Empire State Building. That's what Spider-Man would see, you know, go out
around the city. If you were fucking...
Oh, man. I immediately don't ever want to be a superhero.
I got to jump down there to help that fucker.
It's a long way down, bro.
Well, man, Ome, well, you know, first and foremost, thank you again for making the fucking the stop here at East of the River Network Studios, man. Sir. You know, you just mentioned you're fucking fresh off the plane with fucking New York off a few hours, so I can just imagine how tired you must be.
I'm tired, but the week ahead of me is also nuts. This is the first thing,
mm-hmm.
and then. Tattooing my little brother. He's visiting from Texas. He just had a baby, so he's 9 months old. My little nephew Enzo. Nice.
Congrats!
And thank you. And so I'm down here trying to spend time with him. So mm-hmm. I'm gonna be down here for a week. So I'm trying to tattoo while I'm down here because I gotta make some money. And then I'm doing another podcast for tattooing because I'm a tattoo artist. Uh-huh. I'm doing another podcast on Saturday for a tattoo series called Blasted. Super dope. I'd highly recommend you check it out. Blasted with a Z. And then Sunday, the news is coming to do a segment on my Sochi Yayot flower program.
Hell yeah, dude. That's fucking dope.
Yeah.
Dude, that's fucking awesome. And, you know, with that being said, I mean, like you mentioned, you're a tattoo artist. You're a martial artist.
Right.
And then, like you mentioned, one of the things that you've been working on that the reason why I was like, fuck, I got to know more about this was like the stuff that you're doing in terms of the
flower wars.
The flower wars.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like you recently kind of brought that up like about 2 weeks ago. And that's when I kind of, or maybe about almost a month ago that I came across your page.
Yeah.
And then I was like, what is this? Like, this looks like some martial arts, but you're bringing like some cultural aspect.
Correct.
You know, that, you know, from my understanding, it was like for Aztec. Culture and like mm-hmm. Basically the tribes or groups that were around that time frame, like in the 1400s or something, or is it 1400s?
It's the time of Moctezuma the second,
Moctezuma, yeah,
which is like the late 1400s. The flower wars were actually still taking place at the time that aliens got here, right? European aliens stepped foot on our land, first contact with the extraterrestrials, and the flower wars were still taking place. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned tribes. Like, they weren't tribes. They were like full-blown nations.
Flu-bone. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Full-blown nations. They had everything a nation has. You know, they have systems, institutions. They have bureaucrats. They have, you know, maintenance for the city. They were city natives, you know, with an entire metropolis that rivaled Seville in Spain. You know what I mean? It was actually bigger. I think on the planet at the time, Tenochtitlan was like second or third largest in the world. If I'm not mistaken, I could be mistaken about everything I say today. You know, I think I know a lot, but sometimes I don't know a lot. So all the fact checkers, you know,
they're going to start
to your
gonna message you later.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's cool. But I mean, if you obviously know what you're saying, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I'm just interested in knowing more, you know, again, like the whole flowers wars. I'm going to pull up my notes here, cause I have them right in front of me.
Yeah.
But, you know, basically from my understanding for the people listening, it was like, a form of military, like, what would you say, like?
So the Nahuatl people, which expanded the area, the Nahuatl people broke off into a bunch of different areas. They come from a place that they refer to as Aslan, which is in the north up here. Some people speculate around the Utah Four Corners area. A bunch of native people inhabit that land now, mm-hmm. who potentially of Euro-Aztecan descent, but the Nahuatl people down in Mexico come from that area. There was not pilgrimages, but migrations to the south, right? So as they get down to like the Efe area, they start to split off and settle and start to build like massive nations, mm-hmm. you know, like as they start off as like little cities, kind of like city states, then actual states, and then nations with multiple states.
It's basically like empires at this point.
Yeah. A lot of people use the word empire, and potentially, yes, mm-hmm. I'm not sure we would really know, but I think confederation is more accurate.
Okay.
You know, it's a confederation of states that would make up these nations.
Yeah.
You know, so the flower wars themselves were fought between the Mexica, who were the last, you know, of all the Nahuatl people, the Mexica were the last ones to show up, and they were not treated very nicely. Mm-hmm. And they were forced into like these swamplands, and they turned these swamplands into a paradise. You know, like they were forced to become mercenaries, and were they really, I doubt they wanted to be mercenaries. I think they were looking for somewhere to live and to be stable. But if they wanted to live in that area, they were forced to like be mercenaries for the city state that was in charge at the time. And they became really good at warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Super duper good. And then when they decided it was going to be time for their era to begin, you know, it's a long story. I'm not going to waste the whole podcast on telling the story, but you know, they started a confrontation. They ended up taking over. They created their own tri-state. The Nahuas had like a tri-state system. It was always like three nations mm-hmm. versus three nations. You know what I mean? So people call them the Aztecs, but they call themselves the Mexica. And the Mexica partners. Mm-hmm. They were partners with the states that were... So they were in the middle of a lake called mm-hmm. Tenochtitlan. Yeah, I think it was Lake Texcoco. I might be wrong. And on the either side of the lake, there was two other nations. And so that was their triple alliance.
Heard about that, yeah.
And then they would fight like the Tlaxcala, and the mm-hmm. Tlaxcala were teamed up with like Huexotzinco and another state. And the Tlaxcala were formidable. They were formidable. And they tried to take Tlaxcala a few times. If I'm not mistaken, I think they tried to take Tlaxcala a few times and they couldn't. I think it was noted that one of the battles, there was so much blood on the battlefield that it went above your ankles. It was like, like they fought for reals wars. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like the flower wars. They weren't taking, you know, I'm sure they did try to take captives, but that wasn't the priority for these wars. They were for reals wars.
Mm-hmm.
And according to some of the Nahuatl generals and captains, like the amount of blood just was ridiculous.
Holy shit.
You know, like an entire generation was lost on the battlefield for those wars, you know? So by the time the Spanish get to the area,
mm-hmm.
I think it's Moctezuma who is talking with Cortez or whoever it is, and they're talking about the flower wars. And this is where there's some dispute in the community as to whether or not the flower wars were real.
Mm-hmm.
Because essentially the premise of the flower wars was they're going to go to war there's no jumping each other. It's one-on-one duels, and they're fighting to gain a captive.
Yeah.
And they gain the captive and bring them back, excuse me, to their city. Now, if you killed your enemy, you wouldn't rank up in the Flower Wars. You couldn't gain rank in the military because you were considered sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
You were considered weak. You weren't a good warrior. So they had to capture them alive. You know what I mean? So Cortez is talking with Moctezuma, I think, and he's like, what's up with the Flower Wars? How come you don't just like go over there and take them? And Moctezuma supposedly doesn't want to tell him like, yo, we tried to take them and we can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We tried over and over again and we can't take them. So we settle for the Flower Wars because we both need the captives.
Yeah.
Instead, he says, we could take them whenever we want. We're the biggest dogs in the yard right here. We could take the Tlaxcala and shit. You know what I mean? We say when. We'll go do it right now. But we allow them to be there. Mind you, Tlaxcala is completely surrounded by the Nahua Mexica Confederacy. It's completely surrounded. It's like a donut. You know, they're landlocked. They don't have access to a coast or to water. They might have some lakes or whatever, but they defend themselves really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to save face in front of who he thinks is a god, mind you, if that's true. You know what I mean? Who he thinks like is like somebody who is prophesized to be here. He's trying to save face in front of him, like, oh yeah, well, we could take him, but we don't, you know? So there's speculation as to whether or not it actually even happened the way it was reported.
Mm, yeah.
A friend of mine confirmed he's going to get a doctorate in this field, like Nahuatl combat.
Mm-hmm.
And he confirms that, no, they absolutely took place, you know?
Dude, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy how, like, it became from something that was just fucking bloody and, like, just, you know, war yeah. at its fucking most primitive form, right. You know? Like, no weapons, no drones. It's like face-to-face and yeah. fucking taking your heart out and shit. Yeah. To Flower Wars, which from my understanding is you know one of the main goals was to capture them so they can fulfill some religious obligations, you know, or like, you know, to have labor workers or, you know, yeah. just like this variety of different things that you can use if you were to capture these people
yeah.
and use them in, you know, in whatever form you wanted to.
Right.
You know, it shit trips me out.
You know, according to, I think it's Tesosomoc who teaches Chicano studies at like Northridge and ELAC, if I'm not mistaken, he said that like if you were to kill your enemy during the Flower Wars, you were now obligated to take care of his family.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, for reals?
Yeah. Like you had to like provide for his children and his mm-hmm. wife to you know, you got to keep them, you know, afloat. So yeah, it was a honor-based system.
Mm-hmm.
And which falls into like the religious like obligations, because another thing that I heard was if you were captured to be sacrificed, you were treated like a god for a year. You know what I mean? Like you get to sleep with all the women, you get to eat all the food, you get to like live like a god. And at the end of that year, you'd be sacrificed, right?
Fucks.
You know, but
yeah, go lay down on that rock over there. Yeah, fucking, yeah. All right, it's time.
You know, and but I think, you know, the concept of human sacrifice is disputed, you know, like European academics absolutely say that sacrifice happened, and then emerging indigenous academics, even some German academics,
mm-hmm.
dispute this theory that we would sacrifice these people. I personally believe that warriors were sacrificed. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that like commoners were sacrificed, especially at the levels that is reported by some academics. Like if you were to sacrifice 200,000 people, that's like your entire city. You know what I mean? Like, why would you sacrifice that many? Yeah. You're sacrificing everybody. You know, like, there's no moving forward if you kill, like, off your entire city. But I'm not an academic. I don't know. Mm-hmm. What I do believe, though, is for sure, like, if you were a warrior, you knew what the rules were. You knew that if you got caught, what the price was. If you were to get captured, you knew what was waiting for you. You know what I mean? So that's, you know, when you sign on the line, that's the deal, you know? And like, I'm not, just like today, if you sign the line to join the army, you go over there, there's a chance you're going to get your head blown off. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's the deal. That's mm-hmm. what you signed up for, you know? So in this type of consensual combat and warfare, you know, like that's just a job description.
Yeah, that's fucking nuts, dude.
You know, at least you get to get treated like a king for a year. Yeah.
And I mean, so now I know with what you're trying to do now, like you're trying to bring some concepts of that into like modern times now. Right. Like how does that, how do you evolve it to fit into today's like narrative in terms of, you know, mixed martial arts?
Okay. So my background as a martial artist is boxing, kickboxing, some jiu-jitsu, but like MMA, you know, like I really have an affinity for MMA and I have an affinity for each sport in and of itself, like independently.
Yeah.
Respectfully, I love boxing by itself, kickboxing, Muay Thai. I love them all by themselves and I love MMA, right? So I've been teaching for a long time. You actually interviewed Ernesto.
Yeah.
I used to teach with him at the Warriors program.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. That's how I found out about your podcast, because I saw you interviewing him.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. Yeah. He was at the Arts Fest and did a little video. Yeah.
I've been teaching for like 15 years, not 15, I've been training for 15 years. I've been taught for like 10 years, more or less, muscle medals. And man, there was a point where I was with a group who had, every year they would have like a little ceremonies, like Nahuatl ceremonies. And one of the games they would play was like the Flower Wars.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a kid's game where we had like fluffy pillows. It's like a rock. If you throw it, you're dead. If you have like little Nerf bow and arrows, if you hit somebody, you're dead. You know, we're all just running around like chickens with their head cut off in Obregon Park and just playing the Flower Wars. Uh-huh. And man, it was really fun. It was super fun, you know, but like it wasn't dangerous or competitive or anything like that. And at that time, which mind you, this is like 2017, 2018, maybe. At that time, this idea that I have for the Flower Wars didn't occur to me. Fast forward to last year, November last year, I wake up from a dream, a literal dream where mixed martial artists are in like this full gear, like they're in an amateur Muay Thai fight with the shin guards and like MMA gloves, headgear. Mm-hmm. They have like integrated pads on their chest, like that you put under football pads.
Okay.
If you ever see like football players, they have like these mesh padding, you know, on their ribs and their shoulders. And in the dream, these guys are like fighting MMA with like LARP weapons, like soft, you know, like a club that's not going to cut you or break your bone, but will hurt. They have the foam shields and like they're fighting each other and capturing each other in an actual like Flower Wars simulation. And I woke up from this dream like, oh shit. Like, whoa, vivid.
Yeah.
You know, like, yo, why not? Why not? You know what I mean? Like, why why can't we have that? You know, like, that would be so dope. It would be super dope if we could, like, have that. Because we don't have an indigenous martial art. If you look up, like, Mexica martial arts, you get, like, this lady who turned Asian kung fu into, like, she put, like, Nahuatl names into it and tried to make a kung fu version, like a Nahuatl kung fu version, you know. But it's not a Nahuatl martial art. It's not something that our ancestors practiced, you know. That doesn't exist. We were severed from that lineage. You know, if you Amakwawit is a club with the obsidian pieces on the side, it's not a piercing instrument. You know what I mean? Mm. It's a slashing instrument. This is a tool that was designed to capture people. Now, what was the martial art like? What did they practice? How did they practice to capture people without killing them with a weapon like that? You know what I mean? So we don't have that. And we're never going to have that, you know? Honestly, we're never going to know exactly what they did.
Right.
But we can use the martial arts that exist now, you know, like as I'm thinking about this going on, I'm like, man, we could just, you know, everything we know now, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, boxing, kickboxing, judo, we can get all that, we can apply it to this, and then we can insert the cultural analysis that we do have. Where we fought to take captives, you know? So long as we're fighting to take captives, eventually we're going to walk the line that our ancestors walked to figure out what they did to take these captives, to best take a captive. You know what I mean? We're going to use what we do know. We're going to try to capture them and then and bring them back, right? That's just the first step. Then I'm thinking like, okay, well, how can I make it more of a military simulation, because I used to play airsoft and paintball, And in airsoft, they have like military simulations where they have like armies in deserted towns, and they go in there for 4 days and they're shooting like they're in war, and it's called a milsim, like a military simulation. So I'm like, these guys, some guys are really good. They go on there like absolutely tactical. They go on there like they were a legitimate military unit completing a task. So I'm like, yo, well, if we're doing the Flower Wars, we can make this a military simulation. We can take this outside. We can learn how to articulate a battlefield, and then we can apply that articulation to a pre-colonial context and see what we do. Like, how can we get a bunch of yahoos out in the field with no electricity, no walkie-talkies, no nothing, and how would we articulate this battlefield as a team whose goal is to find the enemy and capture the enemy and bring them back without killing them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the concept of, you know, if we're all out there in the field, think about this. In an MMA fight or a boxing match, it's your job to protect yourself at all times. If you fail to do that job, it's now the referee's job to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're getting whooped and you're not protecting yourself, the referee has to stop the fight. If the referee fails to do his job in stopping the fight, it's now the corner's responsibility to stop the fight. They have to throw in the towel, right? Your job, the referee, and then the coach. When we're out there in the field, we can't really have like referees or drones following a particular squad because it will give away their position.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we make this safer? If somebody's like in a good fight and they're not stopping, and the person who's getting whooped has too much heart to quit, how are we going to stop this fight? You know what I mean? That's one of the things, one of the hurdles that I have to still figure out. But one of the things that actually falls in line with the Nawak concept is, if you knock somebody unconscious, which is going to happen, can't stop it. But if you knock somebody unconscious, we consider that a kill. And that person can't continue because they're dead for medical reasons. So this person can no longer be captured, so your team can't get that point. And the person who killed them can no longer fight in the war. They're gonna get demoted because we're gonna have like a Nawak ranking system, right?
That's pretty smart.
You know, the Mexica ranking system, you get ranked up if you capture people, but you can get demoted if you kill somebody or knock them unconscious, right?
Okay.
So this discourages knocking somebody unconscious, which means we have to be so good at what we do that we're able to make them submit, which is how you capture them. They have to tap out. They have to say, I quit. They got to tap. Right. Somebody, I think, still would have to stop a fight under some occasions, and we have to figure out who that person is going to be. I have some ideas, but we're working out the kinks because we've yet to have a war. We've been practicing for a year, trying to figure out the system, you know?
Dude, that's fucking cool. Because you're having, is it like weekly meetups or like every couple weeks?
Yeah, we train every Sunday.
Every Sunday.
We train every Sunday.
Yeah, and I've seen the videos. Like, you know, there's a pretty good turnout. And I feel like the people are like, at least what you're trying to teach is, you know, it's gaining momentum, you know?
A little
like,
bit, yeah.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So it's fucking badass that you're trying to basically take that cultural context of what Flowers were, mix it into the modern day fucking, you know, MMA, and at the same time, like, fucking, you're evolving it as it goes. Like,
yeah,
you're going through and you're figuring out, okay, maybe we can apply this rule and
right,
just to kind of control it and then still provide a safe space.
Yeah,
but
it's not easy, you know. Yeah. Like, but we're figuring it out. Like, when I first had the idea, like literally the same day that I woke up from that dream, I shot the idea to a couple of people, some good friends, a couple of people. And some of them are like, that's ridiculous. That's too much, you know. One friend, I love him to death, you know, but he made this comment like, it just sounds like a street fight with extra steps.
Mm-hmm.
And when I thought about it, I was like, well, all professional fighting is a street fight with extra steps. Yeah. So it's kind of a compliment, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, like all fighting is a street fight with extra steps.
Yeah, it fits the criteria.
Yeah. You know, and so... Man, I got so much to work out, you know. Like, I started, this idea was like I said, came from a dream. I didn't have like a bunch of people to like bounce ideas off of that were willing to reciprocate what my dream was. Like, I want to create a combat system that's also a military simulation I want it to be extremely difficult. You know, I want it to be safer than an MMA fight where you're not getting knocked. You don't have to worry about getting knocked unconscious. But I want it to be far, far more difficult. Something that's so difficult that when people are in the presence of somebody who has participated in the Flower Wars, they go, oh, shit.
That's a badass right there. Yeah.
Whoa. You know what I mean? Yeah. I can't believe you did that, even attempted that. Mm-hmm. You know, we do something called the Shark Tank where we're fighting. The winner stays in, whether it's like takedowns where you're going to fight for a takedown, the winner stays in over and over. Mm-hmm. After like two or three of just takedowns, like not even fighting, this person's exhausted. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
And that's just to the takedown. Can you imagine fighting back to back?
Yeah.
All day.
You know, it's funny because sometimes people will be watching like fucking boxing fights. And yeah. They're like, come on, sock them, catch them. Yeah. Like, bro, they're already eight rounds in. They're tired, you know? They're fucking exhausted.
And it's hard, man. Like, mentally, it's hard. Physically, it's hard. But it's, I think it's possible.
Yeah.
You know?
Dude, it's cool because, you know, I haven't taken too many, like, martial arts. You know, I went to a few jiu-jitsu classes you know, a few years ago, maybe like no more than like six or something.
Yeah,
but they were cool. You know, I should have kept going. It's just low-key they get a little expensive sometimes. Yeah, you know, so but I went, and the classes that I took, like, it just put my body through these fucking scenarios that I never thought it would be possible. Like, I'm getting choked, or like some guy's on fucking bigger than me is on top of me. I'm like, push me off, and I'm like, dude, it really grounds you back into like, hey, you can't kick everybody's ass. Like, sometimes you walk around like, I could kick that guy's ass. You know, but now, like, you know, it takes...
Somebody who knows how to fight, it's not easy.
Yeah.
But jiu-jitsu teaches you how to lose with grace.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. If for sure, like, you know, you walk out of there like, oh, fuck, you know, first of all, you're exhausted. Yeah. You know, I personally would be like, fuck, I just threw up. Like, I walk out of there. But it brings like this new sense of self, like, okay, I know my capabilities. Yeah. I know what I can work on. Uh-huh. And, you know, it takes discipline for sure. Like a lot of mental, like fucking,
yeah,
I don't know. It's a lot of mental thing. Outside of the physical stuff, it's very mental, you know?
So like in jiu-jitsu, when you, it's not like boxing or kickboxing. When you roll with somebody or you spar, like even full speed, you can give 100% effort and still be completely safe. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You give 100% effort and try to choke somebody or bind them or get an arm bar or whatever it is, like you're grappling, you can give everything you got. And when the bell rings, both of you are fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe a little exhausted, you know, maybe some bruises, but you're fine. It's not, but like in boxing or Muay Thai, when you're sparring, it's rude and you know, you're kind of a dick if you go 100% with your partner. Because if you knock them unconscious, like, we're not trying to do that to our teammates.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So with jiu-jitsu, it allows you to do that, to feel like you just gave everything you got, you know, and then you're feeling that exhaustion at the end of class. And to be honest, like, that's like a drug for me. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm hyperventilating and class is over and I'm laying down on the mat, I'm just, you know, like trying to come back to reality, like, man, that's
your high right
there. That's a high. That's a high I chase, you know? You can get that, you know, training any other martial art. But jiu-jitsu is unique because you can, you know, like I said, give it 100% with somebody.
What got you into martial arts?
Oh, man, that's such a long story. You know, so I grew up in El Sereno, and I had a group of friends. There was five of us. It was me, Marky, Adrian, Andrew, and Archie, rest in peace, Steven. I was going to school. I was playing football, Glendale Community College. It was on my second year, and I got a fractured spine. I got a medical red shirt.
Yeah.
And I came home one day, and I got a note on my door, and is my mom left me a note saying that my homie Archie got shot and he died. And he was from the neighborhood, you know what I mean? And he was only from the neighborhood for like a week. Mm-hmm. Like, he got jumped in on the 4th of July. On July 10th is when he died, a day before his 21st birthday. And I dropped out of school, man. I never went back, never called the coach, never, no, nothing. I just like started drinking, kicking it with the homies. And it was pretty bad. I was depressed.
Yeah.
You know, I gained a lot of weight, got up to like almost 300 pounds. And one day I'm sitting on the couch and I'm all fat. I got no job. I got no money. I got nothing. And I'm watching the WEC. Cub Swanson is fighting some dude, I forget, I don't know, but I'm watching them fight. And as I'm watching it, I'm probably a little drunk because I was like drunk before noon every day. I'm looking at him and I'm like, man, I could do that.
Yeah.
You know? And I couldn't, but I thought I could. And so, but I didn't want to be who I was anymore. I didn't want to be this guy going nowhere, doing nothing. So I went online and I looked up all the schools in my area because I had no car. I had to walk or take the bus. Mm. And the very first one at the top said California Kickboxing. And I did not want to go there because it had like these like chrome silhouettes of these females throwing kicks. And it just read like cardio kickboxing or like,
yeah,
something like that, you know? So I was, you know, I want to do like fighting. And so I call every other gym and I tell them my spiel, you know, like, I got no money, I got nothing, but I'll mop your floors and scrub your mats and clean your toilets, whatever you need, I'll do it. Please, just please let me fight for you. Let me represent you in competition, you know? And they all said, no, like, Kick Rocks, you got to pay your dues. So the only one left to call was the first one.
California
Kickboxing. So I call and then this guy answers the phone and I tell him what my get down is. And he goes, well, let me talk to the coach. So he puts Joe on the phone, Coach Joseph Del Real. And he's talking to me and he's like, all right, come in tomorrow, 5:00. Try out. Yeah. I was like, all right, cool. So I show up and I showed, I went super early. Like, he told me to be, I don't know if it was 5, I think class started at 6. So I'm like, I'm going to get there at 5:30. I want to get there at 5, be there by 5:30 or whatever, and like plenty of time. And I get there and I can't find it. I'm like driving around the block. This is a Fair Oaks and Colorado in Pasadena. I'm driving around this block because I'm supposed to go on Green Street, but on the actual Green Street, there's no gym. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking and I can't find it. And it's before I know it, it's 5:30. And then all of a sudden it's like 5:50. And I'm like, where is this gym at? You know? And I see this door and something's telling me to go down there. I've been looking a lot. This is the only door I kind of haven't gone in. So I go down and I smell sweat. I go, oh, this has got to be it. I hear kicking and stuff. And it's in a basement in the alley. It's like Green Street and Colorado. And in between the two is an alleyway. Mm-hmm. I'm in the alleyway. I go into this door. I go downstairs. And sure enough, there they are. And I'm late. It's like 6:10. And he looks at me and he goes, I tell him who I am. And he's like, oh, you're two Ravens? Like, terrible first impression. Like, hurry up. And I'm like, fuck, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And so I take every class, like a boxing class, two kickboxing classes, and a grappling at the end. And he doesn't really give me any critique. He's kind of mean at the time. And he just is like, yeah, come back tomorrow, you know? I'm trying to prove myself to him. I'm telling him that I'll fight through injuries. And he's like, what? No, I don't ever want to hear that. Like, mm-hmm. Don't get injured. Injured fighters don't make money. Don't ever get injured. Okay, my bad. And day two comes and I break my foot.
What?
I break my fifth metatarsal on my left foot because I kicked the bag wrong and I landed wrong and it just snapped. And I go to the hospital that night and they told me it's broken, not to do anything for 3 months. And I was just like, fuck. You know, like,
yeah.
I didn't sleep. I was in the hospital all night. And then the daytime comes and it's noon. I'm taking the bus to Pasadena from El Sereno. I got to be there by 5 to clean the gym. 5 to 6, I got to clean the gym. I got to take 4 classes and then stay for an hour after to clean the gym again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, fuck. Am I going to call him and tell him, hey, I broke my foot. I'm going to be out for 3 months. I'll see you in 3 months. He's going to be like, nah, man, this isn't for you.
Yeah, you just started. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You know, he already is kind of salty with me. But I said, fuck it. I'm not going to blow this opportunity. I have nothing going for me. You know, nothing. I'm depressed and drunk and fat and I got nothing going for me. And I just was like, nah, I'm going to go. So I put the immobilizer on, like this half cast,
yeah.
Put it on my foot, get on the bus and I'm there at 5. I clean the gym. He shows up at 6 and he's like, what's up with your foot? I broke it last night. And he's like, what the fuck? I told you. Well, I didn't break it on purpose. You know what I mean? I just suck. I'm sorry, you know? So he goes, all right, just don't kick. So I just did boxing. Even from Muay Thai class, I just boxed. You know, I didn't do any grappling, but I boxed. within a month, I went from like 290 something to 230.
In a month?
In a month.
Holy shit, man.
Training 4 hours a day,
yeah,
every day. I didn't, on Sundays I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Every single day. On that day that I told him I broke my foot, he tells me like, yo, man, you're not going to be able to fight for like a year. Now, that's a long time for some people.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I'm thinking that you got to train like Beatrix Kiddo and Kill Bill. And I got to train with Pai Mei for 4 years before I can get my first fight. Like, I got to be really, really good. So when I hear him say 1 year, I'm like, bet. That's it?
Yeah.
A year? Motivated, you know? So I ended up having my first fight in 3 months.
After you broke your foot, 3 months after?
Oh, 3 months later. My foot was still broken. I had a boxing match and I won. And so that was 2008. You know?
2008?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. So you've been, oh, fuck, that's been a minute.
Yeah, though. Yeah. That was 2008.
Wow, man. Yeah. Dude, that's crazy because, I mean, again, going back to the discipline part, like, you know, in the place that you were in at that time, like it just, like you said, like you felt like you were just lost. Like there was nothing. And you just got this glimpse of this fucking thing on, you said on TV.
Right? Yeah.
And you know, and it was just like that thing that all it took was like, I can do that.
Yeah.
You know,
100%.
Like, and like you said, you had nothing else really to lose at that point. Like,
right.
It was just like, fuck it. Like I'm all in.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was something I wanted to do. Yeah. I had interest in fighting before. Like when I was in the sixth grade, my mom, she put me at boxing for a few months. And then when I was older, I tried to box at Bristol Park, but the trainer at Bristol Park wasn't really, I don't know, he didn't give me no attention. So I kind of stopped going. That was like twiddling my thumbs there, you know? And then it's expensive, like you said, you know, like going somewhere to train is expensive. And at the time, I didn't have a job, you know? And like when I committed to California kickboxing, I committed everything, you know, all of my time. I was like, it's like I worked for him for free, pretty much, you know, like, well, not for free, like he was giving me knowledge that I now utilize as a means of income, you know what I mean? Like he gave me a life, you know, and that gym is now called Strikers Inc. It's no longer called California Kickboxing. It's now called Strikers Inc. And it's on the corner of San Gabriel and Las Tunas in San Gabriel Valley, and that's where we train for the Flower Wars.
Dude, Joel's fucking, oh man, like he basically is like that saying, you know, teach a man how to fish.
Yeah.
He fucking, he feeds himself forever.
Right.
And that's basically what he did. He, you know, it's funny, I had this conversation earlier with somebody I met up, you know, like a meeting.
Yeah.
And it's about like the idea that you can provide people a value that doesn't have to be physical or fucking monetary or anything. It could be like a fucking advice, wisdom, knowledge that you at that point can take and make the value that you want it to, you know? And it's exactly what you fucking did. And and now you're trying to bring that back to what you're currently trying to teach and build.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, I feel like that's fucking important. You know, it's
absolutely. Like, yeah. 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 You know, and it's, I have a lot of experience teaching, you know? So with this project with the Flower Wars, like I know what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of experience teaching people that never practice martial arts. So I know how to get what I want out of them. Yeah. The problem is that I only have 1 day a week to do it. You know, I drive down from Hesperia every Sunday to teach this class in San Gabriel. And I've been doing that every single Sunday. I didn't do it this last Sunday because I was in New York working. That's the first Sunday I haven't taught a class in about a year.
Mm.
The birthday of our program is November 22nd. At 10 a.m., right? So we're almost there to our 1 year anniversary. And in that entire year, I think I probably missed like 3 or 4 Sundays, you know? But if I had the opportunity, like if I still lived down here, I would be teaching for the Flower Wars as much as I could. Even if it wasn't at Strikers Inc., we'd meet up, we'd go and do something somewhere, but we'd be training multiple times a day. Like that's my goal, is to be able to give my students the ability to train every day. Because right now we're not fit to fight an entire war. You know, like grappling is the foundation of what we're doing, right? We're trying to fight to submission. So we have like LARP weapons, but we don't use LARPing rules. LARPing means live action role playing. So when you see people LARP, like the nerdy people or whatever.
And with their swords.
Yeah. They have like these rules where if you hit them in the arm, they can't use that arm no more. If you hit them in the leg, they gotta take a knee. You know, like we don't do none of that. Like we're fighting to submission and to inflict pain and damage, you know? Mm-hmm. We don't want to knock each other unconscious, but like if you hit somebody in the liver and they collapse, that counts. They're still conscious. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you can hit them as hard as you want in the body. You could kick them in the leg as hard as you want. If you like incapacitate their leg from a kick, that's cool. For all intents and purposes, we are fighting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a fight. You know, I want it to be extremely difficult. So when we hit each other with the Mukwawi that we make is a schedule 40 PVC pipe wrapped in closed cell insulation foam. Yeah. Right? So it's breakable. It'll mm-hmm. break before it knocks you out. But when you get hit with it, it hurts.
It's gonna pack a punch. Yeah.
It hurts a lot.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And so everybody who wants to rock, you know, we have like a closed cell rubber mm-hmm. shield. It's a chimali. And so that's like the standard getup for a warrior. The chimali, the makwawi, their knowledge of mm-hmm. combat, you know, and they go out there with that. There is rules for ranged weapons. I'll go over that in a little bit. But that's where we're going out there is headgear, like boxing headgear.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to switch to rugby headgear. If you ever look at rugby players have something called a scrum cap.
Yeah.
It's like
kind of like covers this shit.
Yeah. They're more comfortable. When I played rugby, mm-hmm. I would wear a scrum cap sometimes, but they can get uncomfortable when you're tired. Because I played rugby, I knew about the scrum cap, and I was like, oh, that might be a way better option, because mm-hmm. as we grapple with the boxing headgear, it's kind of bulky.
Yeah.
And if you have a good grip, like, you kind of don't want to let it go, but you also don't have to, because it's such a good grip. It locks in, headlocks really well. If you got a choke on mm-hmm. somebody, like, you got a solid grip just because it's so bulky, you know? So the scrum cap is much more thinner. It's squishy mm-hmm. padding, and I think it'll do good. I think it'll be a solid alternative.
Dude, real quick, like, how do you, when you bring this up to people, like, hey, come check this out, and they see this, like, do you get, like, some hesitation? Like, nah, that shit looks a little 100% crazy.
100%. Bro, it's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. And it's crazy, and I know this. You know, like, it's a little extreme for some mm. people. It's goofy for some people. It's like, you know, when I bring it up, like, I understand that it's a nutty concept, but it's also really fun. I have a great time doing it, teaching it. But the look on the face of the people who understand it, like the people who understand Nahuatl culture, mm-hmm. Mexica culture, like Mesoamerican identities and cultures, the people who know about the flower wars and who understand like the systems of the Nahuatl military or Mexica militaries, like when I tell them what this is about, like just the spark in their eyes, like,
yeah,
oh boy, like that's perfect. And not only is it like perfect, it's hours.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's hours in a way that like the people in Europe who dress up as knights and hit each other with weapons. Have you ever seen that?
Like the one where they run into each other or the one with the fucking little thin sword?
No, that's fencing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No.
In Europe, there's these dudes, they dress up as knights in full knight armor and they have like big axes and dull swords and they're like,
pushing
locked in a little thing, yeah. Hitting each other. I think once somebody falls over, they're mm-hmm. done, right? So they're trying to knock each other over. And it's like 20 on 20 in like this little tiny arena.
Like I've ever seen that, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But like that's theirs. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. that's their lineage. That's something that they get to have as like a martial art that belongs to that area, to their descendants, to that people. Like, and it's cool. They get to like reenact, like they get to live fire, reenact little wars and battles. And, you know, that's theirs. For us, like this is ours. You know what I mean? Not only is it ours, but it's hard. It's difficult.
Yeah.
You can't just show up and do it. It's not something that like you can just show up and try out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You have to practice it, which is why I wish I could give my students an opportunity to practice every day, because grappling is hard. jiu-jitsu is not easy. It's not, you can't just become good in a couple of months or even in a year. Like, it might take you a year, 2 years to become decent, to get to a point where somebody's just not going to choke you out at will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to become mediocre, it takes a long time if you're training 3 to 4 times a day.
Fuck.
I mean, 3 to 4 times a week. I'm sorry. You know?
Oh, okay, okay. And that sounds more good. Yeah, it's like, damn, three, four times a week.
Yeah, yeah. Three to four times a week. I'm sorry. Yeah. So with my students, we train for 2 to 3 hours a week. Sunday. That's it.
Wait, how many hours? 3, 4?
Yeah, well, maybe not 4. I think the most we go is 3. 2 to 3 hours. Because we do like an hour of grappling, an hour of striking, and sometimes that bleeds into another hour. Most of the time, I try to keep it at 2 hours because it's a lot. It's a lot of working out. And I try to push my students to exhaustion, to failure. Yeah. You know what I mean? I try to push them to the point where like they have nothing left. You know, we only get 1 day a week, so we have to push until everything's gone, you know? But if we trained every day, then they could get better faster. And the faster they get better, the sooner we can have a war. You know what I mean? Until then, we're doing little simulations like the videos you saw.
Yeah.
The 2-on-2 simulations where it's just that, you know? It can be done in 10 minutes, you know?
Dude, that's fucking cool, man. And honestly, I hope a lot of people more find out more about it. Yeah. Just because it's one of those things that you see. And like, again, I first saw it and I was like, what the hell's going on here? Like, what is this?
Yeah.
But just digging deeper into it, finding out like what kind of like motivates you to do it, and you know, culturally, just personally, and just like in itself and as a whole, it's like, holy fuck, you're really trying to like bring, like you said, create something that is ours.
Yeah, it's ours, and I'm trying to revive something that people haven't done since the 1490s.
Fuck,
you know what I mean? And what I'm doing is not exactly like, it's not exactly what they did back in the Flower Wars.
Right.
Like one of my students, Redbeard, he was like, yo, like in the Flower Wars, they didn't use like atlat or bow and arrow, which are like ranged weapons.
Mm-hmm.
They just fought hand-to-hand combat. Which is cool, and maybe it's a concept I'm willing to explore since we haven't solidified it yet.
Yeah.
But my original concept, where we actually go into a battlefield to find each other and go to war, ranged weapons would give you advantages. If you get hit in the arm with a bow, with a bow and arrow, if you get hit in the arm, you can't use your arm for the rest. You can't use your arm with the bow and arrow. You can't use your arm, right? You get hit in the chest, you can't sprint. You get hit in the legs, you can't sprint with the bow and arrow. If you get hit with the bow and arrow, you can go back to camp and then regain the use of your limb or your ability to sprint. But you have to go back to camp. It's a big battlefield where we're going to fight. It's a long trek. You're going to be out of the war for a while, and your team's going to be at a disadvantage where you're going to get your arm back or your ability to sprint. If you get hit with an atlat, which is like a longer dart, you can't go back to camp and get your ability back. If you get hit in the arm, your arm is done for the rest of the war. If you get hit in the chest, you can't sprint for the rest of the war. If you get hit in the legs with a bow and arrow or an atlat, you can't sprint for the rest of the war.
Mm-hmm.
Like the leg is not fixable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you get hit 3 times with either of these weapons, you're dead. If you get hit in the head,
captured, right? Or you're dead.
You're dead. Uh-huh. So you, the killer and the person who got killed, they're both out.
Okay.
So you have to be a surgeon. You can't just go out there with a bow and arrow. Like, hey, I want to be the bow and arrow guy. Like, no, only the people who are surgeons, who practice this all the time, can hit their targets where they want. Those are the guys that can have a bow and arrow. Those are the guys that can have an atlat. The people who train religiously in their off time. During practice, these are the guys that are the sharpshooters, the surgeons, because if they hit somebody 3 times, they're dead. If they hit them in the head, they're dead. You know, you don't want to kill anybody because we need to capture them. You're doing your team a disservice by killing them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a fucking trippy. I like how complex it can get.
Yeah.
But that's what makes it, I think, interesting and like, okay, let me figure out the rules in a sense, right?
Yeah.
But,
I like it being complex because it forces the leader, the team leader, right? If you're a warrior, your weapon is your makwawit, your Shimali, maybe your Atlat, maybe your bow. But if you're a team leader, if you're a captain of your team or your squad, your weapon is the team.
Mm-hmm.
You have to figure out how to utilize your team to gain captains. So whoever is the most qualified for this position, it's a puzzle they have to solve. And it's complex and it's hard. And you have to solve this puzzle under duress. You have to solve this puzzle not knowing if another team has been taken captive. You have to solve this puzzle not knowing if your team is going to be up for the fight. If you have a squad of five and you roll up on two squads and you got 10 people, you're the team leader. How are you going to use your weapon against all these enemies? You know what I mean?
That's when that tactical stuff and that
You know what I mean? And you have to use the battlefield. Mm-hmm. How are you going to articulate the battlefield? You know, and it's a long war. We fight from sunrise to about 1, 2, 3 p.m. It's what the place is called Ehecatepec, which means the place of the wind. So it's in Hesperia. And around 1 to 3 is when the wind starts to blow really hard. So when that wind blows, the wars are over.
Ah.
You know what I mean?
That's fucking cool.
You know, so you have only until that time to gain the captives. And which means we have to eat out there. Mm-hmm. We have to drink water out there. This is where the youth come in. The youth have roles. 13 to 15 are the porters. All they do is carry shit. They train with us to learn how to become warriors. And during the war, they carry everything. The Mukwawis we have, they break often. So we need like a bunch of them. And they got to take them out and carry them. So if one breaks, they could throw us one. All the arrows, they got to carry them. All the Atlat darts, they got to carry them. All the flags that we're going to use to communicate long distance, they got to carry them. They got to carry all the stuff. Right? So it's hard for them just carrying shit around all day.
Yeah.
Then you have the Teposhaki, the youth leaders, 15 to 17. These are the kids that are participating. They actually get to participate in the war.
Mm-hmm.
They're non-combatant participants. So they're playing tag, right? You can capture them and return them and take them out of the war. So you can take them off the battlefield to create a disadvantage. But these are the kids that like, they're learning how to go to war. So they have a mentor. They're basically apprentice mentor relationship with the warrior. And that warrior has them like their shadow. And they have to learn the hows and the whys. This is why we're going to push. And this is why we're going to retreat. And this is why we're going to regroup. You know what I mean? When we fight this team, we're only going to get one captive from this team. Right? Why are we only going to get one captive? Because we only need one captive. You know what I mean? If we can get the one captive and safely return that, the next time we see this team, 10 minutes from now, an hour from now, it's going to be 4 versus 5.
You know what I mean? That's how you get the advantages.
We have an advantage. You know what I mean? We don't need to take them all right now. That's a harder fight. You know what I mean? So these youth leaders have to learn how to go to war. So they're shadowing. And they're the ones that, hey, we need to regroup. Go and grab the flag that says to rally on me. It's a tall flag, a patli. We put it in the ground so that our team, when they see it, they go, oh shit, we're being ordered. We're being ordered to regroup, to rally on that flag, right? So they're the ones that are doing the things. If nobody's seen the flag, these are the kids that are like, okay, go run. You have to go and run and find the squad because it's a huge field. They got to go find the squad that we're trying to communicate with and deliver a message, which means that this kid needs to be skilled at scouting, needs to be skilled at hiding, at sprinting, at being evasive, and they need to be skilled at delivering a clear, concise message under duress, under exhaustion, showing up to the next team leader like, they said they want you to regroup. You know what I mean? Where? It's 100 meters southwest of here or some shit. You know what I mean? Like, they got to be skilled at giving clear, concise messages, you know? And this is going to teach them to be good warriors, because when they turn 18, that's when they can actually fight.
Ah.
You know what I mean?
Dude, this is some fucking powerful shit, man. No, dude, I'm. It's cool. It's cool as fuck what you're doing. I'm like, interested. Honestly, I would like to show up to one of these one day.
Yeah,
I don't even know what to expect, but I'm fucking down and just show up.
Come down. Come down this Sunday.
We're
have the news there.
Oh shit, that's what you're saying, huh? All right, I'll get in contact with you. I gotta see. I don't know if I already got stuff for this week, but okay, we'll figure it out and we'll make fucking. I really do want to check it out because it looks interesting as fuck.
Every Sunday, brother, you know, bring water, bring some chanclas because you can't go into the restroom barefoot.
Yeah,
and bring a change of clothes because we get very sweaty.
Yeah,
and the will to learn, bro.
Hell yeah.
You know,
I mean, dude, again, thank you so much for taking the time to fucking just explain things and just, you know, just bring the knowledge that, first of all, is not only just has been lost for fucking so long,
yeah,
that we're just barely touching the fucking surface of trying to figure out what this means or what this can be made into.
Right.
And the fact that you're doing it, it's cool, man. You're
doing my best, brother.
Trying to do it.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on and you know, being interested. You know, it's I talk to so many people about it. And they're just like, that's kind of weird, you know? But he, like, you being interested in it and giving me the opportunity to talk about it, like, I'm eternally grateful. This thing is my baby. Like, it's my little baby.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, like, just nurture it, you know?
Yeah.
Incubate it.
I love that. I know that feeling exactly, you know, just with the podcast and everything, the other stuff that I do. Like, when you have that passion for it, you kind of just want to make sure you see it through regardless of, you know, when people say like, what?
Right.
Or like people supporting whatever it is,
yeah,
you're fucking making it happen on
you
it.
Know? And if one day this becomes a sport where the teams are representing their communities and they train to go and be a sport, like this podcast and your excitement and wanting to know about it to the point where we're coming here talking about it, like this is going to be one of the things that helped it get to that point.
Dude, I'm looking forward to that fucking thing, dude. It's gonna fucking happen, dude. There's no doubt,
right?
You know, I feel sometimes you see certain ideas and you're like, it's a crazy thing sometimes that just make it, you know, like, holy shit. Like, I didn't think that was gonna fucking
roll. Right.
But dude, thank you again for taking the time. For people, if they want to join one of the classes, if they want to join or know more about what you're doing or yourself, where can people find you?
So you can find us on both Instagram and YouTube under the same name, which is Xochi Yaoyot, and spelled XochiYaoyotl. Xochi Yaoyot. So when you go on Instagram, you know, we're always posting on Sunday, like, hey, we're training. We start at 1, but we like people to be there like around 12:30 so we can start on time. And then at class, you know, we disseminate all the information about what we're doing and where we're going because we're starting to get people are reaching out because they want us to do demos and help teach classes and do things, you know. So like,
that's beautiful.
Expansion is like on the horizon, you know.
That's awesome, man. And it all started with just that motivation that you got.
Started with a dream.
Yeah, and
it was all a dream.
Hell yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time again, Ome. And we'll see you next time.
Likewise, man. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
It's the ill one joining the resistance. Mexicano Hadi Ciense coming with the big guns. Glitch in the matrix, rage against the system. This is for my fam that got deported, thrown in prisons. I was just a kid, crossed the border on foot, labeled illegal. They call me wetback, hit them back, sharp and lethal. Learning young, staying strong and fight back for my people. I'm shredding all these snakes like a proud brown eagle. Fly high and bomb on them like a double axe. And no como me, mascaras dominating every grapple. I keep a sober mind when I'm going into battle. We leave the opposition in shambles. Fully dismantled.
Limit California in the motherfucking building. Aspect gas tech. Jaguar. Let's go. Real hip hop.
We won't stop till we finish our mission. Living in these hard conditions, people play the position. Don't forget about your roots, don't forget the traditions. Freeing people with the truth, can't erase our existence. Revolutionary troops, known for going the distance. I'm about to execute, never leaving a witness. Connected with how wide on the murderous business. As we pray to the altar, continue blessing the village. This is pura lealtad, this is called the resistance. Yo no quiero tu amistad, I just want your commitment. This is pura calidad, like the dope is a shimmets. Yo predico la verdad, always speak with conviction.
Peace, love, righteousness. This is Laser Guns. Salute, comrades. Let's go. Hey, yo.
Jimmy Fly Snooker, you better look up. Bombs cook up, Skynet days, AI maze. Photon grenades, 8 brains. I'm forever, y'all just a phase. Eating right, controlling my grades. Hazy days, alien aids. Sober my ways, headshots never upgrades. Feel the sun, burning your rays. Swinging my blades, breaking the cage. Needle the rage, it's time to engage. Laser guns, enter the stage. We the cure, y'all the break. We sure you're gonna fade. Military upgrade, this ain't a holiday. We forever great, like they say. Better late than never.
I need. So blood for the rage, how can I keep it peaceful? I'm lethal, I leave your brains on a beast. So this from my mama that was raised in Jalisco. La gente Cuyuteca, let me give you clecha. Heart of a warrior, sangre de Azteca. Waiting in the dark, I'm a spark like a mecha. Aim at your heart cause I'm sharp like a flecha. It's a war with the gavas, esto no se acaba. Deporting our mamas from here to Chihuahua. So who want the drama? Flow like the agua. My homie locked down, learning how to speak Nahua.
Yeah, chop the father from the east side of Houston, Texas, baby. What up, Jag? What up, Acosta? Let's get it. Look, look.
From the island to the H, they got chop involved. Only using liquor when I'm throwing Molotovs. I'ma spit consciously till we all evolve. Turnbuckles, only thing that I'm falling off. Pop a swanton bomb on a crooked cop. Fight till the sun dawns, all these bullets drop. You know all my boys be spot, they sabotage. Weed supposedly, I got the hand of God. I'm a warrior from the south, only talk what I'm about. If you wanna go that route, then I'm all up in your mouth. Barely hit my stride, normally on pride on them. Be the sacrifice, suicide, die.
Yo, yo, you already know who it is. It's Mr. Lewis, and I am rebuilding the culture from Sacramento, California. Yo.
Freedom to the people, this my real life. Being taught to hate yourself, know what that feels like. Going home with this information every night. And we didn't have no healthy role models in sight. I was 23 when I heard about Huey P. The Black Panthers in the move really got to me. It's important that we lift the black families and stay consistent with that movement, that's my strategy. I'm getting ready for a lifelong combat. And self-sufficiency is really where the bomb's at. Clear-minded, remember that we're under attack. I know I'm guided, the universe keeps calling me back.
I go by Infinity. Rest the power to my father, Stitch, I love you.
Give America with 3Ks. Pimping every hour for a dollar. Captivated by the slave trade. Slaving for a dollar that you know that I cannot save. I mean, I can't afford it. You know how you do me daily. But this hustle is so native to me. My bloodline so indigenous. My lineage, Taino, so much stronger than your code. See his phone. The coldest tell I ever told. But see, you're my own father dose. And pass away from drugs you sold. So, sobriety is sacred. And there's gratitude to KF. You done saved this Philly native when you told me that my bloodline carries strength and that America's afraid of what this unity you'll do when we're together and it's untamed and unchained.
Untamed and unchained, how wide, full Dana district. If you don't know where you come from, then how can you defend yourself?
I threw the package in the water, there's a Mayan mask in it. Blew them on when I wrestle, I submit them in the last minute. Sewn into my vest, it's Comanche and Apache. Plus, blew that bitch out patches. I'm a different kind of savage, different type of fabric. Been through the terrain like Juan Diego's Guarache. Just feel the danza del venado in Arizona y Sonora. I'm singing with a rattle. Otto me shield that's embroidered on my saddle. And it's a lot of factors that contribute to addiction. These caucasoid men made a mafia for prescriptions. But I remain sober under any type of pressure. This for every migrant. Missing in the desert.
Yeah, I saw Mali. Made you to Freeport, you heard 516. Yeah, listen, why? Yeah.
Yellow green macaw feathers, I'm in the Amazon. Camouflaged with fog venom, that meant for tryptamine. From the leaves might cause sickness. I sapphire, bring fire to cross bearers. Live might try, but it's solid, authentic. I'm differently acquainted, but I'm rocking the arcteryx. Calling us a savage, but they're really the barbaric. My hand on the leather while I'm reading on God's letters. Liquefied braille, grayscale, and broad mirrors. Help you when you see, when you feel the facade clearest. Allow me to tell you a few sentiments. Another boy dead on the news, recruit lettering. Hood holocaust, what he do for the blue Benjamins. Never giving us an example to do better than. Drink away the pain, we ain't needed some new medicine. Treated like some savages cause of our humanity. But there's no differences, Dominicans and Mexicans. Because we're all indigenous to this planet with evidence. Jack told me just to pouring out the aguardiente. I'm feeling sick, enter tierra caliente. You can see it in my eyes, one with the serpiente. Trying hard to stay sober, so I sharpen la mente. Word.